Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. On the latest episode, we wanted to hear how the mayfly season went this year on Lough Shielan. Myself and Tom spoke to Eamon Ross from the Lough Shielan Trout Protection Association. But Tom, before we hear from Eamon, I have to say I've never fished Shielan myself. It's one of those places I've been meaning to get to. And it seems so as well. It's pretty popular with dubs also.
Yeah, it is. Very much so. Very much so, Garrett. Yeah. I haven't fished Shielan that much. I think I've fished about half a dozen times. Only myself.
How's you doing it?
I think I've 3 blanks and I got 3 fish and none of the ginormous fish you expect in Shielan. They're all around 2 pounds, which, as we're saying, are good fish. But as we'll find out later, it's all about perspective.
Yeah, because it's one of the questions I ask Eamon about what makes it so special. And it's funny, you're saying, oh, I only caught 2 pounders. Like, you know, I suppose yeah. It's one of the draws of Shielan, is it, for people?
It is really. It's that, and also as well, we talk about it later, but because of last year with the lockdown, I actually got to fish Shielan for this spent gnat fishing first time ever. And because normally I'm booked out, but because of lockdown last year, and I found myself, even though it was open for fishing on Corrib, I had a couple of free days because people couldn't book, people didn't know. So I got up and fished the spent gnat. And I was amazed by the amount of spent gnat, like nothing like what we'd see here on Corrib, nothing at all. And like, I was with there's Paddy Ward from Multifarnham, and I was looking at him, oh God, look at all the spent gnat. And he was going, it's not a particularly good night. I was going, what? I said, but there's loads of them. No, there aren't really. But like, compared to what I'm used to on Corrib, was just phenomenal. I just saw like reams of spent gnats going back out onto the water. It was a tough night that night. We'd only one fish, pound and a half, small fish.
Yeah. Is it a case then that the trout there have so much to choose from?
They really seem to. I mean, the feeding there just, it seems to be phenomenal. It's a bit like, I remember chatting to Ken Whelan once, and he was talking about the size of trout in places around Ireland. And he had a really good saying, which I always say to people. And basically he goes, fat cattle, fat trout. And you know, you go and you go, what? And then you think of it, and you think of, like, you know, the small mountain lakes here in the west of Ireland, where, you know, cattle wouldn't be huge now because they'd be poor feeding. Whereas there, when you go into the Midlands and the rich land and everything, where cattle pile on weight,
the limestone. Yeah, so true, the shore. Think of the shore.
Yeah,
my river, like, and it's, yeah, that's a very good, yeah. So
it's a really good point, actually.
If you see any skinny cattle,
yeah, hightail out of it. But it's funny, you were saying there you've never fished it, and you were saying to me about never fishing the Moy. It's good to have things on your bucket list that are really easily attainable, and like, you know, rather than, let's say, Greenland. For me, which and I know you're going there. I will get there sometime, I hope. But you know, it's a place you can tick off the bucket list quite easily.
I had this dream in my head, maybe when I'm retired, but I hate even those thoughts of, you know, 20-30 years, you know, that kind of way. Like, I'd love to be one of those anglers that the mayflies up and you follow it. You know, you go from Derg to carb, yeah. Sheila, you know what I mean? And you're like, I know there's been a documentary done on it, but I remember once actually I was on Quran, I think it was the end of the season, and I saw some fellow with his big SUV, and it was a big fly fishing truck, the stickers and all the decal on it, and I was like, oh man, that's the kind of life, you know. But maybe another life I'll get to do it. But that's the thing, I think. Yeah, I think a lot of anglers, from what Eamon was saying, is they get up there and they just get sucked into it, and they just want to spend all the time fishing it. Like,
that's it, yeah, and that's it in a nutshell. They get sucked into it. They do. The glue pot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tell you what, let's hear from Eamon now, because he's got some really interesting insights into the fishing of it, how the mayfly season went, and a lot of similarities probably between carb maybe. On it as well,
yeah,
but also really I suppose just I was fascinated by what Eamon had to say in terms of just the trout, you know, what they're feeding on and just the different stages of it, and as Eamon even says, he's as happy to walk the shores in the winter time to watch the trout.
I'm very much with them on that, because I used to live in a place here in Cornemona. It was up in the valley, up in the Crimlin Valley. And there was a waterfall right below the house. And I used to just go down and sit there for hours. I used to work in O'Malley's at the time, so it wasn't too bad. If I was on a night shift in O'Malley's, what I would do is during the day, I would just go down and sit beside the waterfall. And I'd just watch the trout just jumping up past me. And they'd land on my feet and everything. It's amazing, actually. You talk about fish being out of water. I've seen fish being out of water beside that waterfall for over a minute, flapping around. And then finally just getting back into the water. But I agreed with them totally, because there's something special about watching trout running the spawning streams.
Yeah.
It's just magical. So with them totally on that.
Great. Well, sure. Look, let's hear from Eamon. And I first asked him about how the mayfly season went on Sheila.
I'll give you my experiences of Sheila. I'm sure everybody has a different experience. But in general, I probably won't be that much different than everybody else. I found it tough. I generally take off. Normally, I'd take off at least a week. Now, I didn't get off the week this year, but I'd attempt to be out around the 15th of May. And generally, that's the start of the mayfly. So usually what you can do is you can start on wet flies. You'll get fish on wet flies at the start. You'll struggle on wet flies after a few days. You might have to go on to nymphs and on to dries. But none of that worked this year. I had one good day on the nymphs. I don't think I got a fish at all in the wet flies. I had four fish one day on the nymphs. I took off a few days then and struggled badly. Now, I got fish in the evening time on spent, but I don't really count that as being part of the mayfly, because it's, it is mayfly fishing, but I suppose I like trying to get them during the daytime as well. And it was really, really tough this year.
Yeah, that seems to be a thing with Sheila, doesn't it, Eamon? That when the mayfly comes up, to get your wet fly or your green fly fishing, it's the first week, or even shorter than that, isn't it?
The first few days. And normally you're going to get some time that you'll have a really good day on greens. And I didn't get that this year. I never hit it at all this year on the greens.
And Camille, was that conditions, though? Do you think was that conditions purely, or...?
Well, I'm racking my brain on that one, Tom, because I had really good fishing from the start of the year. I like fishing the wet fly on Sheelan. And look, I have my own theories on it. I think that fish, they're very, very well fed on Sheelan, so they're lazy. You have got to be slow in the way you fish, and you've got to get the fly down to them. And they tend to feed on hog louse and snails and stuff like that at the beginning of the year. And as well as that, you'll get fish with mayfly nymph in them at the beginning of the year. And I had good fishing, and there was really, really good buzzer fishing this year. So right up until the end of April, it was very, very good on the buzzer. So I was getting real good fishing on the buzzer. And I remember chatting to a lad on the shore, and we were looking forward to the mayfly, because the mayfly is something that you always look forward to. You build your year around it, because it normally you can get really good fish on it. And we got not cold, but very, very windy weather. And it wasn't warm. Now, there was massive hatches. Fish never came up to the top. And if they did come up to the top, they come up just to tease you. And they seemed to know how far I can cast. So they used to always come up a bit further out than I could get near them. And they just would disappear. And I had a young lad out with me from England who was out on his first trip for the Mayfly. And I brought him out coming from the airport. Now, we went out for the spent that evening. It was probably around the 20th. And we would have seen that we would have seen loads and loads and loads of fish up on the spent, but found it very difficult to get them. So I got one that evening, but I felt cheated that we didn't get more. So it was difficult. There weren't, you nearly wanted to be able to put the fly on the fish's nose. And you know, there was nothing easy. They weren't moving, they wouldn't move left or right by a centimeter. So you need a bit of luck to get a dopey fish coming up in front of you so that you can get them.
It gives light to the fact, Eamon, of Duffer's Fortnight, doesn't it?
Well, it does, yeah, because it was really tough now. And you know, normally I bring people out that are new to fishing during the Mayfly. I like to bring people out that don't normally do a bit of fishing. And I struggled to get them people fish. I had to hand the rod to them so that they could experience a fish. And like last year, I had people out with me and they got fish on the blind on dries. None of that this year. I got no fish on the blind where you'll be fishing a dry green and the fish would come up and take it. So none of that.
Seen many free risers at all? No.
No. I wasn't. Oh God. Yeah. Mm. A very odd one. And usually, like those ones, they knew how far it could cast and that they'd rise just away to your right. And the other thing that I noticed now, I've noticed this a few times at Sheelan on the spent when they, and sometimes they'd come on the spent in the middle of the day on Sheelan and spent go out. They were coming diagonal. They're always going away from the sun. Now that's fairly normal for trout, but they were coming in a diagonal direction away from the boat. So you just had to be, you know, you might get one chance as they came across by the front of the boat. You might be able to get your fly in front of one, and that's the way it came. So look, it was interesting, but it was
difficult. Well, that sounds like it makes what is already a difficult task of covering them even more difficult if they're doing that.
It does, yeah. There were people did get good fishing on it, and there were people that did, and probably better casters than I am, and they were able to get, to cover fish. But I found it difficult this year. And the nymphs didn't work at all for me. After the first day, I struggled with the nymphs, and it was a great method to get fish. It's one of the methods that would have worked for me in the last four or five years, where you'd get consistent fishing on it.
Eamon, how do you fish the nymphs? Do you fish them like buzzer style, or how?
Same as buzzers, yeah, same as buzzers.
So you're fishing a floating line.
I fish a floating line if it's flat cam.
Right.
And even then, I might have a midge tip on. The fish are lazy, and yeah, thousands and thousands of fly coming up, and if you're not. If you're not at their level, they just won't take you.
They're not going to come to you.
They're not going to hunt them anyways. Now, I'd fish, I suppose, I had a 6 or 10, I'm not sure, is it a 10-foot slow tip? And I'd have fished that a good bit this year. I'd have fished fast tips as well to see what I get down a bit deeper. So
Would you do that, let's say, would you switch to a fast tip when it's maybe a bit windier?
Yes.
We have to, yeah.
So you have to throw out. But on the buzzer, all I needed was a floating line.
Yeah.
But the fish came up in the water for them, but they stayed down seemingly. And so the other thing I think as well is that I just, and I don't think that this is a difficulty, but I think that the stock levels in it are not as big as they were a couple of years ago. So I'd say that either, you know, in a wild lake, and the same in the Corrib or on Mask or in other places, in my view, you're going to have years that there's going to be a big surplus of fish over and above what I see as the critical level. There's probably a critical level you need for fly fishing. And I think that's down a bit on Sheelan this year. Now, whether or not that's due to bad spawning for 3 or 4 years ago or what's the reason, I don't know. But I have no evidence for that. I know that there was a stock survey done on it, and the fisheries were very happy with the levels of stock in the lake.
But, yeah. It's a very good point. I agree with you totally on that critical level. There's a critical level of fish you have to get to make it sustainable for fly fishing.
Yes,
because that's the same with any lot.
It's probably the most inefficient way to catch them.
I often say to people, like, if you wanted to deplete a lake of its trout, right? And you were given every method known, and you want to get rid of all the trout in that lake, going at them with fly fishing would be pretty low on the list. You know, there'd be a lot of other methods to clear the lake of trout out before you get to fly fishing.
Yeah, and I don't think, look, I think that in any of these things, you don't, I don't think you could do it, but at the same time, there's another thing as well, Anshin, and there's a fair bit of catch and release goes on. I think to get smart after a while.
That's not the first argument we've heard actually on this show this year. We heard a similar argument about Corrib.
I'll give you an example on that defeats my argument. I was out in it this year with I think it was Paul Owens who was fishing beside me on the buzzer, and he left a fly in a fish in the morning, and he caught the same fish after the dinner and got his fly back. So that one obviously didn't learn.
No. But,
and I know of another guy, Larry Moley, who caught a fish, a great fish, about 7.5 pounds on a buzzer. And the fish was photographed, and another fisherman had a photograph of a fish with the same markings at around 5 pounds. So I think that the argument is that catch and release does work. But I think when you're fishing, in particular, if you're fishing mayfly nymphs and you've touched a good few fish and everybody is doing it, they do get a bit wise to that, and they're not stupid. They just ignore them after a while.
Can I ask you what fishing pressure was like this year? Like, well, you know, or has it increased, you know, over the last years? Obviously COVID accepted, but do you think fishing pressure has a lot to do with that as well? Maybe
it wasn't as bad this year as other years in Chile. And Chile is very small, and it does get a massive influx of people. You wouldn't see a Christian on it now. You could go out and you'd have a place to yourself. And in fact, you could get quite good fishing on it now. But there'll be very, very few people on it. And a lot of the lads that go out on it in the mayfly will be going out specifically either for dries or pulling wets. I'm not saying, but they go out for a week or two and they really enjoy their days out. But I tell you one thing, they got it tough on Sheelan this year. But there wasn't massive, massive pressure. There was a lot of boats, and the boats tend to move around a lot. But I don't think that had an impact. It certainly shouldn't have an impact on the nymph fishing anyway.
Can I ask you just, if you wouldn't mind, I just wanted to go back to something yourself and Tom kind of mentioned near the start of that, is in terms of you're saying is it's better at those first few days, is it?
Well, that was all of my experience, Dara. My experience on it was that if you were there on the first few days of the mayfly and you had your wet flies, you would see fish up on the greens, but I didn't see them this year. Now, that's not to say that others may have seen them, but I certainly didn't come across them. And after, let's say after 3 or 4 days on the wets, you then nearly have to go on the dries. They won't follow them. They seem to be, if you ever see suck calves let out onto a green field, they jump around everywhere and they'll kick their legs up. And it seems that the trout will do that when the greens come on first in Chile. They didn't seem to do that this year. And they certainly didn't go on to the greens on the drive. So it was a tough, tough time. Now, Chile is predominantly an evening lake anyway, so it's always difficult to get fish it's difficult to get fish during the day. You can still do it, but it's nearly like, I don't want to compare it to salmon fishing, but you'll pull a lot of flies to get maybe one or two rises and wet flies. But if you do get a fish, they're always fairly good. So it's not a place like Corrib where you could be rising fish, or like Mask where you could rise a lot of fish during the day. You'll rise one or two or three and you might get one, but it'll be quite a good fish.
It could be the fish of a lifetime for most anglers.
It could, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the chances of getting a 5-pound-plus trout, I think Sheelan is probably the lake in Ireland.
It is, yeah. If you were looking for one, that's the place to go for it.
Yeah.
And of course, I give out to myself, and I give out to people that fish with me when we get fish 2.5 and 3 pound on myself in a small one. Yeah. It's scandalous the way we look at this stuff. You know, he's a little fella, 2.5 or 3 pound trout.
And yet you went and fished Melvin on Saturday.
And got all excited when I had one 10 inches and thought it was nearly 11. And you get the net out.
Yeah.
So you'd be lifting the fish in 15 inches on Keelan and you wouldn't even use the net. And on Melvin, you're shitting yourself putting the net out to catch this small little guy. And I don't think, but they're lovely trout on Melvin again.
And they're gorgeous.
I really love Melvin. It's my second favourite lake now.
Yeah. But that is so true. You get all excited in Melvin. He's 11 inches, yes.
So look, I suppose that's the way it was. It's the one thing, though, it always gives you the few fish. Like, we did get some really, really exciting spent fishing. There was some evenings that I was out, it was lovely and exciting. And I always felt unfulfilled this year in my spent fishing, because I never got more than one. And I felt that I should have got more than one. There was enough fish up several evenings that I should have got more than one fish. But, you know, you're doing well to get one. So you'd be getting fish 3.5 or 4.5 pounds. And you get anything huge now on the Mayfly. I'd say the best one was about 4.5.
Only 4.5, yeah.
And is it noticeable then, like, once, you know, is it like that 2 week period, and then once it's died off, the lake just, like you said, it's quiet, dead quiet then?
No, that's not the case. I think there's an absolute massive excitement. I get this big, huge rush of excitement for the Mayfly. And you build yourself up for this massive bit of fishing that you're going to do. And you spend this inordinate length of time out there. When I write it down in a diary, and I keep a diary of what I'm doing. When you actually analyze the time you put in with the numbers of fish, you don't get any more than you get in a normal run of things. You'll average yourself out. But it doesn't just stop on Shielan. During the Mayfly, if you were inclined to do it, you'd probably get as good a fishing on the buzzer and on sedges if you went to look for it. Because there will be sedge fishing. Now, it'll be a bit later in the evening. And you'll definitely have Murrock fishing that's beyond belief. Now, the Murrock fishing is extraordinarily exciting, but it will be happening at the same time or around the same time as the spent. And if you're after spending the day on the lake and you have struggled and the fish have just kept out of your way, you're sick of it and you just want to go home and get a cup of tea and go to bed and go back again the next day. Whereas if you were willing to wait, there's an extraordinary half an hour where you can fish with Murra. And it is the most exciting fishing, because you'll have fish up on them. It lasts for that half an hour. You could get one, you could get two, but you'd rarely get three, and you mostly will get none. But you have the excitement of seeing them thrown at them and maybe pulling out of them, and it's just a very exciting way of fishing. So you have that going on. And at the minute, you could go to Shielan. Now, I haven't been on it because I've been doing other bits and pieces, and you have to kind of stay at home another time or you'd be thrown out of the house. So I'll go back again probably this week, and I'm going to go up to do a little bit of sedge fishing at night time. And I'm hoping that I'll get a wee bit of the smaller sedges. Now, if you ask me the names of them, I probably won't be able to tell you, but they'll be lighter colored sedges and smaller sedges than the Murrocks. But there'll still be a bit of Murroc fishing on it. And you will get fishing on that. And it can continue right on into the summer.
Are anglers missing a trick to a certain extent, Eamon? You know, maybe people who aren't regulars to Shielan, that they just think, oh, I have to go for Mayfly. And like you said, there's other periods. And probably the same, Tom, with Corrib as well, that there's other periods where you get as good fishing. Like,
yeah, I suppose I'd agree with you, but it all depends on what you want. You might just want the Mayfly. And if that's, you know, it depends on what sort of an angler, like, and you might have an angler that's just delighted to get out for his time on the Mayfly and isn't going to be bothered trying other stuff on Shielan. Now I have all these theories. I fished the buzzer, or I fished the buzzer this year on Shielan, and I had great success with it this year and last year. And up to that, you know, I would have started off with wet flies. I never done that on any wet flies. Tom, when I started off, and when I met you first, it would have been a dedicated wet fly fisherman. So if you want to catch fish, you've got to have some. You have to innovate a little bit, and Shielan is the best place to it'll teach you that, because you just won't catch them. I have this theory that the trout have to feed. Now, they'll probably go on to perch fry and pin fry and all the rest of it, and you'll get them on minkies, and you'll get them on stuff like that. But they also feed an awful lot on hoglouse. They feed on all sorts of nymphs. They'll still feed on buzzer nymphs. And I'm convinced that if you dedicated yourself, and I'm intending to do it this year, that if you dedicated yourself and fished that method of slow nymph-type fishing, you will get your share of fish on Shielan as well. So that's the thing that's in my head. So, for instance, fishing snail patterns or corixa patterns are...
Good, you know, good shrimp patterns, yeah.
Yeah, and I know there's a guy fishes with me, and he's from, he's Cavan guy, Jerry McShane. And Jerry is one of the guys that told me about, he used to say that the fish were out the middle. Now, we would never have fished. So when I started fishing, you always fished in the shallows. Now, it's not a very deep lake anyway. He used to tell me about these fish out the middle, but there's nothing, there was no, what would I call it? There's no features out there that you can identify to fish, you know, to identify where a fish might be. But they are out there. And he's been telling me this last number of years that, what do you call that? Black and peacock spider fish slowly on a floating line down deep will catch trout for him and has caught trout for him. So I'm intending to try something like that. So I'm convinced that if you fish like little hare's ears, pheasant tails and stuff like that, and on a slow, maybe a 3 foot midge tip over weed beds, you'll get fish. But it requires a level of patience that I'm not sure that I have yet.
Yeah, I think if you set up to do it with somebody though, yes. I think that'll help you, right? To do it on your own, it's kind of hard because you can wander. But if I found that if you are going to try a different, and or if you're going to innovate, that's the word you just said. You're going to innovate and go try something. Get somebody to do it with you, because I've tried to do it on my own, and like after half an hour, the head starts wandering and you're going, geez, do you know what? Now, if I went at wets, I might catch something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens. And that's why a lot of people actually don't even stick at buzzer fishing,
yeah.
Let alone innovating on something new.
Yeah.
So if you do it with somebody else and you say, look, we'll do it now and we'll stick at it and we'll do the day. It's the only way I find to innovate anyway.
Yeah. I think that on Sheelan, one of the things I say to people is you'll always get a chance in it. So if you're, so I'd have pulled wets on it a lot, and you always get a chance. Now you mightn't hook, but you might miss your chance, and that chance might come on the first pull, might come, and you don't know when it's going to come. And it's the same thing with if you fish dries. So I've went out and fished dries all day, and you'll get fish to come up to you. So I'm sure the other way will work as well. But we do tend, Tom, to revert back to what we're comfortable with. And my most comforting thing is pulling wets.
That's it. Yeah, it's the comfort zone.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. You see, if you're on wets, and let's say you're on a float line or an intermediate, or if you're on dries, you'll see the take, okay?
Yeah.
Now, he might miss the fly, but you'll still see it, and that keeps you going. And the problem with lads buzzer fishing, or let's say what you're thinking of trying to do, is a fish could start to you, and you mightn't see it, right?
Yeah.
Unless he touches you. And even if he touches you, it's a tug. Right, at least with the rise, it's something. Oh, gets you going.
Yeah, you see something there. Well, look, I was describing, because there's a fair bit of controversy about some of the buzzer fishing and the nymph fishing, where you know there's a fair bit of discussion goes on, like the use of
controversy in trout angling. I won't believe it. No, I don't believe it.
Well, maybe it's discussion. We call it a lively discussion about drogues, and there was a few lads that anchored up. Now the anchoring up does really annoy anglers that somebody might anchor up. Now, I haven't seen it, and I haven't been bothered by anybody doing that to me. But I used to describe, you know, when I'm describing the nymph fishing, I say it's underwater dry fly fishing. But that's what it is. Like, you just don't see the rise, you feel the rise. But that's what you're trying to do. You're leaving your fly there and let them take it. And there's nothing as exciting as it, in my view.
I agree with you totally.
Can I ask you, is buzzer fishing, is that the kind of most recent innovation that you've seen on Sheelan? Like,
come here. I'd have said that Sheelan is, there's been buzzer fishing going on in Sheelan for yonks and yonks and yonks. It mightn't have been, you know, people were fishing it when I started first. So I'd say to you that innovation has started on Sheelan. There was canis fishing going on in Sheelan before it was ever heard of in Corrib. I know guys that were at that stuff in the middle of the day or in the middle of the morning when everyone should be in bed. They're not, I don't think that they're nearly right. But anyone that goes out, you know, having said that, any of the videos I see of it, I think it's extraordinarily exciting. But there were people fishing, and there probably still are. I've never done it. So when you talk about buzzer fishing, I remember fellas fishing on Sheelan with little, small, sparsely tied wet flies that were essentially buzzers. They just weren't epoxies. They weren't fishing them deep, but they were fishing them in the top maybe 2 foot or 3 foot of water. And they were getting fish. And it was the very same method. The fish went off at the fly. So we just didn't, I suppose it hasn't adapted to the epoxies as much as, let's say, it did on Corrib. But Shielan doesn't have the typical duck holes that Corrib has. It has some areas that are better than others. But it's a very, like, it's a naturally, it's only 14 foot average depth. So you sometimes your biggest difficulty is keeping your flies off the bottom. So you have to, sometimes you're going on to lighter ones and stuff like that. But, there are people, and there's people that have been doing that for a long time. I only started in the last, I suppose, 4 or 5 years, and I've got them. The first fish I got on a buzzer, I got them in preparation for the International in 2012. So, and I didn't stick with it because we didn't have much success with it at the time. And we ended up on dries and pulling wets. We never even tried the nymphs, I don't think, that time.
You didn't have to, actually. Back to that, I remember that International. That International fell perfect for that period that you're talking, the start of the mayfly, where they take the wets or the dries. And it couldn't have been planned. It couldn't have turned out better to have the International that week. It was perfect.
Thank God it wasn't this year, Tom.
It'd have been something else.
And I can remember that I promised that we'd win it at an ITFFA meeting. I said, we'll win it in Shielan. And I never was sorry that I said it, because then I ended up on the team. There was fair pressure on, I'm telling you.
Well, you did win it.
I got a fish anyways, which was... But I remember missing a fish in the first probably 15 minutes. And I'd say 99 times out of 100, I'd have hooked him. I was pulling wets and he came up. You know these trout that come up and down on top of your fly? And by the time he had his head stuck up, I had the fly taken off him. I didn't wait for him to go down at all. So.
Oh!
Eamon, can I ask you, what's your own kind of background in fly fishing? Do you live near Shielan? Did you grow up with Shielan? Where did you grow up with fly fishing?
I'm from Sligo, so I don't like to be, it's not that I've anything against cabin men, but they beat us in the football at the weekend, so I'm in bad humour with them. But I grew up in Tubbercurry in Sligo, so my fishing started on the Moy, and I used to fish the Mountain Lakes and Loch Talt, Lough Eesky, Tullavilla lakes like that, Loch Gall beside Lough Eesky. So I didn't catch trout a pound weight until I was 17. and it was a sea trout. I got them in Clunacool and the Moy on an Alexandra fly. And so you'd be fishing down and across, and in the lake, I'd have fished, not always legally, but I'd have fished with flies, and I'd have got loads and loads of small trout. But I don't think I ever got a trout bigger than 3/4 of a pound on any of the mountain lakes. I'd say that a 3/4 of a pound one was a massive one. So
are they the ones up in the Ox Mountains?
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah. Did you ever read Luce's book? Luce's book.
I did, yeah.
Fishing and Thinking. Didn't he talk of one lake up there that had big trout in it, long, thin, black ones?
Yeah, well, sure, I've often heard about them. There was one lake called Loch Fossa, and even my grandmother used to tell me that they brought trout from Scotland to it, but I don't believe that stuff. I think it was a story. And I went up with a fella from Connemara. He was a school teacher in Tubbercurry, Mick O'Connell. And myself and Mick would go up there and fish. And we never brought a fishing rod with us, but we fished it anyway. Mick had his own means of fishing, which he brought from Connemara to Sligo.
Did it involve a floating bottle?
It did, yeah. And I never seen a trout in it. And I used to be starving, and they'd be ate with midges. But I never got anything in that fossa. But... there was another lake beside Lough Eesky. And I know, I'm going to tell you this story anyways, just you asked me about my background on it. I used to fish with a cousin of my father's called John Martin Harron. And John Martin had a brother who was a priest, and he'd come home every year, Father Ignatius. And Father Ignatius was an avid fisherman. And at one point they decided that they were going to stock Loch Gall with trout out of Lough Eesky. So they brought out one of these kind of galvanized basins. If you remember them, you might have got washed in one of them at some stage, Tom. But they used to fill it up with trout out of Lough Eesky and carry it across the bog to Loch Gall. And they put probably hundreds of trout into it over the summer. And the trout in that lake absolutely grew to enormous size. Whatever was in the lake, it was something phenomenal, the growth rate on the trout there. So it was no trouble to get a trout over 3 pounds, and they were well-made trout. They weren't big, long, lanky things. They were big, fat lumps. So either there was crayfish or something in this thing, but it was something extraordinary that the trout that were in that. In fact, I remember losing a trout. I was with John Martin Hearn, and we lost a trout. He was doing the fishing. I was with him. I was only 14. The day before Sligo, we were in the All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry in 1975. And we were never bothered too much in Sligo with going to Croke Park. We were all supposed to go to Croke Park the next day. And my father had tickets bought. And I can still remember the fish. And I said to him, God, maybe we shouldn't go to Croke Park. We should go back to Loch Gal to see if we get a big trout like that. I was absolutely disappointed that we were going to the match. And during the match, at about halftime, John Martin turned around to me and he says, Eamon, we should have went back to that guy. Because Kerry hammered us that day.
Yeah. And come here, and there are any trout still in that lake?
That was surrounded by forestry. I don't think there's a trout in it anymore. You nearly can't get into it now. They just planted trees all around it. So,
how long have you been fishing, Shailen?
I'm fishing it since 1981. So
do you remember the bad old days of it? Like,
yeah, I remember when I came to Shetland first, it was, you could not see down more than, you just couldn't see into it. It was in an awful state. And what you had at the time was massive hatches of huge buzzer. That's nearly the only flies that were left in it. There was a huge stock. I won't say a huge stock, but the trout got out of proportion to themselves. So you had a lot of big fish and no small fish going into the lake. So you would kind of, because there was an algal bloom, the whole caryophyte weed died on the bottom. It interfered with the whole, I suppose, ecosystem. Big, huge increase in roach numbers, massive increase in pike numbers feeding on roach, and the trout numbers were under savage pressure. The one saving grace for Shetland was that there was extraordinarily good spawning streams in it. So the trout were still going up to spawn, but when the fish came back, there was nothing for them to feed on. So there was no caryophyte. There was no insects. There were the roach were eating all of the daphnia. So in what I understand happened is that no more than sea trout, if you don't find food in Shetland, you go on down you go to the next place down, and they went down into the system, into the Shannon system. So for a number of years, it was like that. And I remember the time they put in a slurry removal scheme where they removed the slurry out of the area. I will never forget the immediate impact that had on water quality. It cleared up within probably 2 years. It was crystal clear, and the mayfly came back. So nature has an absolutely massive way of regenerating itself. And so there was a lot of work done at the time by the LSTPA. I was just a committee member at the time, but they did a good bit of work on the trout, the tourism angling measures. So they spent a lot of money, and only for that being done, Loch Shetland would have died, I'd say, at the time, because it did provide stock to come back into it. Now, there was a lot of stocked fish put into it at the time, and people relied on them. It was I never liked them. I always liked to catch the wild ones. So since 1981, we've been lucky. We started a hatchery on it. It was great fun, but it never made a huge difference. And we've done an awful lot of work on rivers and spawning streams. And I think that's one of the reasons why the stock has increased and has, I suppose, recovered to the extent that it has. And if a lake isn't able to sustain itself, then you're in big trouble. But one of the saving graces for Shetland is that there's massive spawning. So when you go up the little, there's two rivers, one of them went up the Shetland Shamrock, the Innie, and the other one, it's called the Innie as well, but we call it the Mount Nugent River. And it spans out like the tendrons in your lungs or in a leaf, and it just gets into smaller and smaller little streams, and the trout go up all of those places. So I have a massive interest in that. I'd have as much interest in going up in the wintertime to look at them spawning as I do nearly in fishing. I get such a kick out of that.
What's so special about Shetland?
It's the big fish. Like, you can really get big ones in it. So for a lad that was brought up on quarter pound trout. So when I was going to school, I went to school in Banada beside Dubber Curry out in the country. And there was a pub there, Malarkey's, I think it was Malarkey's pub, beside the bridge in Banada. And there was a trout stuffed in the pub, which was 2 pound weight, the trout was. It was 2 pounds. So he was a huge fish at the time to be stuffed. I used to look at him and think, how would you ever catch something that big? And when I went to Sheelan, I used to tell the lads at home about catching trout, 3 and 4 pounds. And they didn't believe me, that you could catch wild fish that size until I started to bring them down to them. So it's the size of the fish and it's the challenges that it provides. So you're never, ever, ever going to get it easy there. There's an odd day you'll be lucky and you'll hit an easy day, but you rarely are going to have an easy day. You're going to have to think, and you're going to have to think what you want to do, what your approach is going to be. You're going to have to change lines. You're going to have to go down and go up. It's not someplace that you can just put on one line at the start of the year and fish the rest of the year and that'll do you. No, you will get your share of fish at that, but you won't. For me, it wouldn't be as fulfilling. So I think that if you can catch fish on Sheelan consistently, you have a good chance in other lakes. Now, I've learned an awful lot on rainbow fishing as well, and that you can apply on the likes of Sheelan. So you know, when you talk about, so when we look at the way some of the rainbow anglers will approach how they try to target fish that are feeding on specific things, that I suppose it gives you a challenge to see where will this work on Sheelan as well. So that's what I like it for that. I like the, you know, I look forward to the 1st of March. If I'm out, I'll go out on the 1st of March and I'll go out in freezing cold and I love it up there because you nearly always get fish. So I'd fish a sooty olive at the start of the year because you get them on hog louse, you get them on snails, and I'd fish over, you know, out of my own favorite spots, but I'd be liking to fish over places where the weed has died down over the winter. And you'd be hoping that they're trouting. And if you get a warming of the day, you'll get them on wet flies. It's just phenomenal. It's really, really exciting. I'd have a great time for it.
That's when you're back to the zone that you want to be in, when you get them that way.
Yeah.
Right. So, hey, well, listen, one thing I want to ask you, Eamon, and we've asked everybody on the podcast so far, what has been your most memorable fish? Now, we mean your most memorable, not be the biggest one, but definitely the most memorable fish that you've caught.
Okay. Well, the most memorable fish is the one I didn't catch in 1975 in Loch Gall before Kerry Bates in the football. But I can't count him.
Right. So, but you'll never forget him.
I'll never forget that because it was so big.
Come here, actually, before we move on to the one that you did catch, what size do you reckon was the one that locked up?
Over 5 pound. And I can remember,
wow.
You know, I can remember his fins, you know, they were flared out and he jumped up in the air and it's like in slow motion in my head. Now, I might be creating this memory myself, but I'll never forget that. The excitement that I actually seen this. And you know, that only takes 2 seconds. He's up in the air, a couple of seconds, back down again, but it's imprinted in your head forever. And I remember looking at John Martin and wondering why he wasn't continuing to bring him in. He had broken the line and went away with all our flies. But anyway, and Sheelan, I've caught a lot of big trout in Sheelan. I've caught fish with John Murray, a friend of mine from Sligo. He comes up and we've caught fish over, I reckon that I got one on the nymphs last year. He wasn't double figures. He was as close as it is that it wouldn't make any difference. But the one that I remember is, I out on my own one time, and it was a lovely summer's evening getting towards dark, and I was fishing wet flies, and I used to dread flat cams coming because then I couldn't fish wets. I wouldn't be able to do anything. Like, I couldn't fish nothing after that. So it was calming down towards evening time, and I was fishing up at Derry Sheridan, and the wind was blowing up the lake. So if you can imagine, my boat was drifting up, the shore was on my left, and on my right, up in the top corner of the lake, the sun was just about heading down and shining down the lake. And the wave was dying, and I had a Bibio on the top dropper. I hooked a trout on the Bibio, and he went up in the air and jumped between me and the sun, and you could see the water flying off him, and there was kind of a rainbow came off him. And I managed to land him, and I never apologize for bringing a fish and killing one and bringing them home. I used to bring them all home that time. But I remember hitting him on the head and saying to myself, well, I'm going to enjoy this fella, and packing up and having such satisfaction, heading over with a trout over 3.5 pounds, and to get him in such, you know, in such nice conditions where he jumped, and he jumped a lot and threw these masses of water up into the sun, and you could see kind of rainbows coming off them. So that's my most memorable trout, caught in a Bibio, probably on a floating line. And I had fished all day, and I got one rise, caught him.
You got your one chance, and you took it.
I did, yeah.
Thank God, yeah. And you'll never forget him.
Oh, no, I often do remember that one. And I'd said that was in about probably in the late 80s.
Yeah.
I was working in the creamery in Killeshandra at the time. And I would have often went up from work and went out to fish for the evening. I don't know how my wife and children put up with me. I would go off and go fishing. And there was only one car, no mobile phones. I'm sure they didn't know where I was at the time.
But isn't it those moments, Eamon, that we live for? Like, it's not necessarily, like I said, you know, the biggest fish, but, you know, you paint a great picture of that there. I can picture, you know, the sun setting and the fish jumping up and just catching that moment. You know, yeah. It's just catching that moment, and that's what stays with, and that's why we do it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you said there, like, because earlier on when we were talking to you, you said, nothing big, 4.5 pounds. And you were just, you know, the other fish maybe this year. And so you've obviously caught countless numbers of 3.5 pounders, right?
I've caught loads.
3.5 pounders. But that yeah. one,
stuck
that one's
mind.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I don't want to run down. Like, they're fantastic trout. They're, you know, mm-hmm. and those big trout that you catch up there are just fantastic. And the fight that they put up on Sheelan in the last, you know, you get a 2.5 or 3.5 pound trout. They're just phenomenal, the battle that you get out of them. So, but look, that you asked me a question, I answered it as honestly as I could.
Well, Eamon, it's been brilliant talking to you. It's been really fascinating insights into Sheelan, kind of, you know, what makes it tick and what makes it so special. And I, for one, would love to get out, hopefully maybe later this year to try it, because I've never fished Sheelan. So it's definitely, it's another one from my bucket list, Tom. Bit closer to home.
Yeah, it's like me and the Moy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Eamon, best of luck for the rest of the season. Thanks a million for joining us.
Okay, look, thanks very much. I said that I probably didn't know you were going to get half an hour of me. I could probably talk for another half an hour. And
well done.
But anyway, I don't want to start telling lies. Look, thanks very much, Tom.
Our thanks to Eamon Ross for joining us on the show. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on irelandonthefly.com, as well as on Instagram, and myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.